you know, wellness industry, whatever you want to call it, it's just looking after your health, right? It's a more holistic look at it. And you're talking about Reiki, and that's at one end of the scale. But then you've got yoga, Pilates, mindfulness. But we've got people coming and talking. We've got someone that does financial advice specifically for female entrepreneurs and stuff. So you can class all of that within wellness and looking after yourself. And I always remember he's wearing glasses, massive head he had. He was much bigger than that. And I went to throw a punch at him and I missed his head completely. And I just hit his glasses and knocked his glasses off.
Aww.
And he just stood there looking at me and I felt like a right twat. And then I got home, I got sent home from school as you do. And my mum, instead of bollocking me for it, she actually rang up the local boxing club and said, that's it, you got to do boxing lessons. You look back at it sometimes, I think that actually was a wicked video. And we got, probably it was closer to about 8 million because we got 6.5. But somebody downloaded it, uploaded it as theirs, and they got about 2 or 1.5 as well. So loads of views. And there were people coming in saying, I've seen the Skippy video, we'd like to come and have a go. So it really worked. But the reason it probably went viral is because people just wanted to take the piss out of what I was wearing on my feet, basically. So in our first year, so 2013, we won the best new gym in the UK at the National Fitness Awards, which kind of gave us a platform then to grow. And we ended up winning another 5 of them. 2018, we won the best gym in the UK, so the best in independent gym in the UK.
Before we get into this, we're doing over 1 million engagements a month, but most of you aren't subscribed. If you enjoy the content, hit subscribe and follow us on socials. It'll make such a massive difference. Cheers.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good. Thanks. How are you, bud?
Yeah, good. So would you tell us a little bit about yourself just to kick off and then we'll go from there?
Yeah. So I guess you could say I'm an entrepreneur, Birmingham born and bred. I used to box. So yeah, ex-boxer entrepreneur now. An event promoter, which is where I know you, Chris. And then we do a couple of different bits now. We work with other founders and people in the fitness industry. And just try and champion people in the area that are doing good things, really.
So yeah, you talk about, we know each other from Ultra Event, which is the white collar boxing.
Yeah.
So how did you initially get involved with Ultra?
So I was I was coaching for them. So way back 2012 when I opened the gym, Riggs, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But we started running our own shows, Strictly Business they were called. That was 2013. And then Ultra got in touch saying they needed someone to coach in 2015. And we did that. And I did it for kind of 2 or 3 years. And then off the back of that, we were asked to start running the shows on top of it. Started in Birmingham. We did the boxing shows first, then into MMA. And then, I mean, you've seen Ultra does all sorts. It did dance shows, it did comedy shows, it did all that kind of stuff as well. It still does. And we ended up running them in 14 cities across the UK. We were doing between 40 and 50 shows a year. And that was even things like weightlifting shows from the gym and fitness, fitness competitions. So yeah, we've done a lot over the years, we really have. But Ultra has been the kind of main organisation stuff we've been doing, yeah.
So how does an 8-week training course for boxing or MMA compare with 8 weeks for stand-up?
I tell you what, boxing people think is obviously it's nervy when you get up there, but the people doing the comedy, they are, I've never seen people so nervous before because you've got nowhere to go. You stand up on a stage in front of, I don't know, 400 people. And if you say something you think is going to be funny and the room just goes silent, that is a terrifying place to be. Whereas boxing, at least you've got someone in front of you.
Yeah.
You're not really aware of what's going on around you. The training course is it's different for comedy, obviously. It's kind of like, well, how do you teach someone to be funnier? You're either funny or you're not really. But there is a structure and there's a standard in place which comedians are. It's a lot of work behind the scenes. You probably don't think they do, but it's really important, I think. But no, the training for the boxing's tougher. It's harder, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, so take us back then. So you boxed at 18 up in Leeds. How'd you get into boxing?
Funny-ish story, if you like. But my first bout was when I was 18, and that was an unlicensed bout, if you like, in Birmingham. I started training when I was 16, and I got into boxing because I won't bore you with the details, but I ended up getting in a scrap at school, like we all do when we're 16. And the lad who was a lot bigger than me was just giving it loads, you know, as 16-year-olds do. And I thought, I'm not having this. I'm gonna put one on you. And I remember, always remember, he was wearing glasses, massive head he had. He was much bigger than me. And I went to throw a punch at him, and I missed his head completely. And I just hit his glasses and knocked his glasses off.
Aww.
And he just stood there looking at me, and I felt like a right twat. And then I got home, I got sent home from school, as you do, and my mum, instead of bollocking me for it, she actually rang up the local boxing club and said, that's it, you got to do boxing lessons. And then it is all history from there. It was Paul Gilmore was my first ever coach. And if you know Paul, massive blues fan, runs Combat Sports Center. He's been my coach and then co-promoter and business partner ever since. But first bout was when I was 18. As you say, I went up to Leeds. I was a uni student at Leeds for 4 years. Boxed as an amateur up at Leeds. I competed in the British Championships and all of that kind of stuff. Come back after Leeds, continued doing your unlicensed and your white collar. And then it was probably when I was about 24, 25, we then moved into promoting it more than actually fighting on it.
What was that then? What was the kind of inclination to step away then?
Yeah, I mean, look, full transparency. I probably could have turned over as a pro, but I wouldn't have been very good. I weren't good enough to be a top level pro fighter. And at that time, the gym was really busy. It was really successful in the first couple of years. And you've got to make a decision, really, because you can't just dip your toe into boxing. I think, you know, it's a dangerous sport at the end of the day. I wasn't fighting novices, people who'd never done it before. And you need to be fully focused on a camp. And if you're not, then it's dangerous, a dangerous place to be. So, you know, there was more of an opportunity with the gym and the other stuff we were doing business-wise. And then obviously promoting shows you can earn more dough from it. You don't get punched in the face. So it's a no-brainer, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always nice not getting punched in the face, isn't it?
It is, yeah, yeah. That's what its benefits, yeah.
So Riggs and I, how did Riggs Fitness come about?
Yeah, we opened Riggs when I was 23. It's like I did 40, I'm 37 now, so it's 14 years ago. But it came again from Paul, who was coaching me at the time, and he kind of, I left uni, I set up a business when I was at uni, it was called GB Nutrition, in my final year, and I was trying to sell supplements online. And When I finished uni, I was coaching at the same time in the fitness industry, and I was having a go at all of those bits. And Paul just said, why don't you open your own gym? And he found the place in Moseley, which is where Riggs still is now, just on Willesley Road. And we did it. Yeah, I was 23 and we opened it up. And I remember at the time, a lot of people kind of say, God, that's a risk, isn't it, doing that at that age? But I don't really think that, to me at 23, you know, I didn't have a missus. You know, now I'm married with kids and a massive mortgage. You know, it's a risk if you do it now, in my opinion. So when you're 23, it was more accessible for us to do it then. And we opened it on a shoestring because the government at that point were trying to make it as hard as possible for people to run a business. So utilities were lower, the rent was lower. We didn't have to put a load of dough into it to start the gym. Yeah. And we made a good go of it, yeah, in our first year. So 2013, we won the best new gym in the UK. The National Fitness Awards, which kind of give us a platform then to grow. And we ended up winning another five of them. 2018, we won the best gym in the UK, so the best independent gym in the UK, which is about, this was at the National Fitness Awards of Leicester, which is about the, you know, one of the best awards you can win, really. And it's, I was 23, I just thought, let's have a good go at this, believed in what we offered. And we gave a good service, it's a great product, we have a really good team around us. And it just grew, and we just kind of, we rode the wave until we then ventured out to other bits.
Just take bits of what you learned throughout your training when you were younger and growing up through boxing, and take the kind of spirit and ethics and stuff with you.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I certainly wouldn't have been a world beater at boxing, but I always had the determination and the work ethic, and that's like I've always had since I was younger. But it does teach you a lot about yourself, I think, and this is probably a different conversation, but that's why I think it's still got a place, in my opinion, in schools. Boxing should be taught to kids, because if you talk about resilience and learning to lose and you know, when you're in there, there's no one else helping you. You can have a brilliant camp and you've got a team behind you and you've got a team in your corner. But when the bell goes, it's you and one other person, and you certainly learn a lot about yourself. The first time you lose in boxing is in my opinion, but when you learn marks, it certainly was from there. And you take that into business. But I think you can probably draw from most sports, can't you? And competition from that, and the transferable skills into business, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's the loneliest sport in the world, and that's what they say, isn't it? Once you're in there, it's just you and it.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
And you'll learn from that loss. Yeah. Can we go into the... into the...
You'll learn. Yeah, I learned when I lost last year. Yeah, that's what I mean. Stepping forward. So yeah,
it's meant to be a stitch up then. You were like...
steps.
Yeah.
Now opening Water Orton, the alternative beauty alchemist provides advanced results-led treatments in a peaceful, private setting. From skin transformations and environ facials to body contouring and specialist massage, every treatment is tailored to deliver visible results. Experience expert care with over 25 years of industry knowledge. Follow on socials at Alternative Beauty Alchemist.
So yeah, balance.
Talk to us about the white collar boxing. I'm just interested to see about your promotion and stuff. Is it, how difficult is it to promote? Are people more into it these days? I feel like they are. Obviously, you've had the journey through it, but
yeah.
What's it like, and what avenues do you look to promote, and how do you promote it?
So a massive part of what we do is through Ultra. So Ultra is set up. It's got franchises in each city, and like I said, at one point we had 14 of those franchises. And it's just the company's a powerhouse of getting people in, the way it markets and advertises. It's brilliant the way it gets people involved. So that side of it, we then take over when everyone has signed up, and then we run the process from there. And that is aimed at beginners, first time novices. Sometimes we'll have people that are doing one or two, but it's all beginner stuff. You wouldn't sign up to an Ultra show if you've got any level of experience, really. And it is aimed at, like traditional white collar should be, people that probably wouldn't be able to box if they were doing white collar.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean by that. If you're 30 and you're walking in an amateur club, you don't really get a look in with the eye.
Yeah.
So that's one side of it. And then the strictly business stuff we do, that is, it's when people have probably had two or three, a bit of a better standard, but still want to box on a really professionally run show. What we do, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, but you know, the structures we have in place, the way we organise it, it's as professional as you're ever going to get, really. So that's kind of what we sell. We sell the experience of feeling like a pro on a show that is run like a professional event. I mean, we also do a recent promotion, just thought, which is Good Stop Promotions over in Stratford as well. A friend of mine, a training partner since we were very little, set up his gym over there. Exactly the same thing. We do K1 on that as well, some kickboxing, but it's just offering a space where people can feel that they're on a show that is done properly. And there's a lot out there which are in all parts of boxing and martial arts, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just jumping in, we had John Pegg on, and he just said about, so you were talking to him about your white collar boxing experience. How do you fathom out the guys who have had 30 fights and want to come in and just punch an electrician's head in? How do you wean out people who are coming to...
Do you get much of that? Do you get much of... Because I know these people...
It can be dangerous, I imagine, couldn't it?
Well, this is where the horror stories come from, isn't it?
I think so. You're talking about people that are way too experienced, that want to sign up and just leather someone in front of them act.
Yeah.
To your question, Chris, we don't get a lot of it. I think you've got to be a certain kind of person that would do that. I mean, if you're a boxer, if you've boxed as an amateur or to any level, you tend to find you've got a certain amount of respect anyway, haven't you? But you might, we have had people that sign up that have done a bit. They're clearly a little bit too experienced. The way we run shows is we do a lot of due diligence beforehand, so we send out questionnaires and that kind of stuff, and it ties in with the medical part of it as well. We need to know if anyone's got any medical issues. We then ask about experience, and a lot of the time people are honest. Used to do a bit when I was younger. I've had a couple of kickboxing bouts or something like that, so we're aware of it. But the honest answer is, it's as soon as they start training.
I was going to say, I bet as soon as you see footwork, you know that.
Personally, I've coached probably 2,500 beginners. Right? We've been doing it for 10 years. We run 4 shows a year. That means I've made 1,250 matches. So we're experienced. We're so experienced at looking at beginners, but they'll turn up with a brand new, well, not brand new, they'll turn up with a skipping rope. They'll turn up with really worn in, like Reyes gloves and that kind of stuff. And it's obvious from that point of view, but as soon as they start, you know, up on their toes, moving around, throwing a few shots, as soon as they get their rope out and start doing dumbbell unders, it's just obvious. And I will always have a conversation straight away with them. Look, no problem you being here, but it's going to be really difficult to match you on this, because we are not going to match you with someone that's a beginner. There's just no place for it, because
Where do they go then, Evan? Where do they go if...
As in, where can they go and fight?
Yeah, because I know amateurs, you're not allowed to fight over 40, are you?
No. So they wouldn't necessarily go the amateur route. They'd probably go the unlicensed route, and they'd just go and find a show that might not be as hot as we are on letting people fight. But if I put my business hat on, there's no longevity in a business model if you do that. Like, if you're signing up for the first time and I match you with someone that's had 15 fights and you get battered in front of all of your friends, you're going to leave a terrible review. Yeah. Everyone's going to think that what we're offering is terrible. So from a business point of view, there's no sense in doing that. But also just from a duty of care, like the majority of people I've coached are doing it because they love boxing. They've always wanted to have a go, or they've been in a really bad place and they want to use something to focus and make themselves healthier and that kind of stuff. And yet, you know, just the thought of matching them with someone, it's obvious, right? If I'm matching with someone, if I sit down when we do our matching process, it takes a long time.
Is it like X Factor? Do you have all the...
Yeah, because we have to have an audit trail of who we've seen spar, when we've seen them spar, when they've weighed in throughout the training sessions. And we have, you know, a score out of 5 when all the coaches have seen them. So it's a lot of work we put into the matchmaking to make it bang on.
And again, with your business head on, you want those fights to be competitive, don't you?
It's got to be, yeah. It's got to be. Now, you know, sometimes the occasion gets to people. Yeah. So you can see two people spar, and you know that's a bang on match. That's fine. Weight's good. Everything's there. And then one doesn't turn up on the day. And that's sport at the end of the day. But yeah, we have to be confident. Ideally for us, you know, me and the other coaches, when we're sitting there making the matches, we'd look at all of them and go, don't know who's going to win that. We want that to be. You want every fight to be a draw. Then you've done your matchmaking correctly. Yeah. It's never like that, obviously. But
there was a lad last year over at Sutton, and he didn't really take the training too seriously.
Right.
And he got sparked out in the first round and said the canvas was wet because the ref called it straight away. He's done 8 weeks and didn't really lean into the training. Right. And then that happens. And
yeah.
I think if you're going for it, you've got to be all in.
So it's only 8 weeks, isn't it? Yeah. If you want to do it and you want to have your family there as well, it seems balmy that you wouldn't put that effort in, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, look, you know, you've done it with me. So, you know, like the pre-camp talks when I get everyone together and talk about it. I think one of the benefits of the way we do it is we have a lot of people that take part in the shows, and the shows have been successful over years and years and years. So I'm not in a position where everyone has to take part.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is if someone signs up, they sell 4 tables worth, they've raised a load of money. If they get to week 6 and I'm looking at them and they're good enough, they're not going to fight. I'm going to pull them to one side and say, you're not ready for this. And we'll move them on to the next show. We'll give them another 8 weeks or that kind of stuff. But we're only really able to do that because we're in a position as a business. Like, I'm not relying on the fact, fucking hell, he sold 5 tables. I need that dough. Whereas I think you might find some, you know, some shows would need that it would live or die.
Like, just look at that money and just go, send him in.
Yeah, and you know, maybe you'll find an argument as to why it's okay and they can still do it, and or if he trains a little bit more. But yeah, you're right. 8 weeks, and I think everyone's in the same boat. So everyone's only got 8 weeks, but everyone has the same opportunity, to get fit, to train, to do the extra stuff.
Yeah.
If you just do the bare minimum, anything can, you can't expect to have your hand raised, really.
I think you've gone on record and said that it's safer. Is it safer, do you think, than amateur or pro? Do you put in, is there that much red tape that you need to do? Was it from a due diligence, you as a person?
So I think, so it's difficult, right? Because there's a... Boxing as a whole and combat sports as a whole, and you've got professional, you've got amateur, and you've got white collar or unlicensed and bare knuckle and all of that kind of stuff. And people like to be in one camp or the other. You know, they say British Boxing Board of Control, England Boxing, that is the pinnacle of the sport. You know, everything else should be like that. I don't personally think that's the case. And I know you've spoken to people that are involved in amateur boxing and British boxing that will also say that. But then on the same token, I'm not saying every white collar show or a licensed show is run perfectly. You're going to have good and bad operators in everything, just like we do in all walks of life. The way we run shows, and particularly Ultra, it is really, really, it's the safest way you're ever going to get in the ring, really. As we've spoke about in the past, Chris, you know, Ultra now has an ISO 9001 and a 45001 certificate now, which is an international safety standard. And it has to show that each year they are continuing to improve their model and the operations, and they've got a commitment to the safety. Now, you don't get those easily. No, British boxing doesn't have that. England boxing, I don't think, has it either. So the way we run shows, yeah, it's safe.
It's much more of a commercial entity, isn't it? It's much more of a business.
Yeah, exactly. And it, you know, as you'll know as a businessman and some of the bits I do now, if you're looking at risk, you know, putting a risk framework in place or something like that, you often do those at the start of a company and you think, oh, yeah, I don't really need this. But it's when something scales is when those frameworks start to become worth the paper they're written on. And you're right, Ultra is a scale business. It's a massive, it's a big, big business that promotes all over the UK and in other places in the world now. But it has those frameworks in place because it has to, like you say. If you're doing one show a year, you might get away with it all the time. But you just can't afford that, really. But yeah, back to your question. I think the way we do it, you know, obviously I'm going to advocate for the way we do it. But I mean, you've been through the process, the steps that we put in place before you start training, throughout the training, the audit trail we have when we're doing our matchmaking, the operation side of it on event day and post event day. You know, we have all boxes covered. But I think you'll find other operations that do that as well. Maybe not to the extent that we do it. And obviously, British Boxing Border Control is licensed, so they have to follow a set framework as well. But it's not always the safest. I mean, if you look at a recent example of Eubank Jr. and Conor Benn, there's a few bits around that. Like if you look at the weight draining side of professional boxing, you can't really have anyone say that's a hugely healthy thing to do. If you're losing weight from your body, it doesn't just go off your belly, does it? You're losing water from your blood brain barrier and
inside.
Did you see the women's fight the weekend?
Which one?
It was one of the DAZN card.
The
Misfits card.
It was proper boxing, but the girl's in a induced coma.
Okay. Yeah.
But they were saying she'd cut weight 7 pounds or something to get down to the weight to fight tonight.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, that's a, and everyone talks about that side of it, but cutting water weight, it's not a healthy thing to do. You lose water everywhere. And then if you're putting someone in a position where they're getting blunt trauma to the head, it's why Eubank Jr. spent as much time as he did in hospital, I imagine, afterwards. But, you know, that's not a safe thing to do. Everyone is aware of the risks and they're going into it. But then you've got, you know, amateur boxing, you've got younger kids that have been asked to get down to a certain weight category.
It's mad, isn't it? That's just an agreed thing that everyone's, because yeah, well, it is what it is.
Oh, we had Frankie on, didn't we? He was Frankie on a bike in the sauna. Yeah.
A bike for 3 hours in the sauna.
Some woman said to him, we're not letting you, if you do this, we're going to be throwing the book at whoever's told you to do this. Because it's just not, it's just mental. Yeah. It's just mental.
And that was for the Olympics, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it's coming from a high
everyone
standard.
Everyone just go, yeah, that's fine. You've got them, even the UFC, haven't you? Kind of passing out on the stage, doing the...
Doing their weight.
Cock-eyed. Mm. And everyone's like, yeah, here's what it is.
But that's what I mean. So you know, my personal, you know, if I put my diplomatic hat on, like I said, there's good and bad in all aspects of it. So I think it's wrong to just say, if you're not doing what amateur boxing and England boxing are doing, then what you're doing is incorrect, because it's not. I mean, we do everything right, and that is why we've got such an amazing track record across the Strictly shows we've run, the new promotions we're doing, the Ultra shows we've run. We've got a spotless track record because of that, because of the way we run it.
Yeah.
But that said, yeah, you might have some unlicensed shows that you go to and the medical provision isn't there and that kind of stuff, but there's good or bad everywhere, I guess.
Yeah. One of the key points about this as well that you'd mentioned was the amount of people that have boxed and have told you that it saved their life.
Yeah.
Because they're on the brink of suicide or whatever it is, what they're going through.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's, you know, it's something you can, it's something you could probably gloss over, to be honest. But the amount of impact, the positive impact that boxing in general, right, has. But I only see it from our personal point of view. But you've had people, probably more than 10 people I've had do our shows in the past, and they pulled me to one side afterwards and they said, look, honestly, doing this event, putting my focus into something positive has saved my life. Either they were on the brink of doing something stupid, or even if it isn't to that extent, you've got people that are losing their way, addiction. We regularly each year have people that have maybe gone through a rehabilitation process from addiction to whatever it is, and they're using it as a positive way to focus their life. And then at the end of it, they come and speak to you, and you kind of hear it, and you think, you know what, it's all, there's very few jobs where you get that kind of level of job satisfaction, because you are having a positive impact. And just bringing it back to the, you know, the main stuff we do with Ultra, if you look at the amount of money which has been raised for charity.
Yeah, so even just your thoughts alone is 2 million plus. Yeah, and then you were saying Ultra in total, what was that, 40-odd million?
43 million. So the promotions we've done has been more than 2 million, and that's the platform that allows people that take part to raise money. But that's an insane amount of money, if you think about it, how much, you know, how much good and the benefit that's going to do across...
You don't hear of it then?
No, you don't. And that's it. But press, no one wants to hear good news stories, do they? Yeah. They just want to hear what goes wrong and what's
bad. Someone, if someone died at the fire, it'd be all over everything.
Yeah, like you just said there about that, I don't know the girl you're talking about, but she's in a coma. You're going to hear that. You're never going to hear the good side of it. But the conversations we have with people and the way it changes their lives, and then by extension, their families' lives. Do you get someone that's just on the booze and they don't know where they're going? Oh, I'll have a go at this. They sign up to it. They're getting healthier, they're getting fitter, they're focusing, but then they'll end up joining the gym, and then that's got a knock-on effect. They'll bring their kids there when they're ready to do little kickers or whatever the classes are and that kind of stuff. And the more that spreads, you know, the more positive impact it's going to have on everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a mad thing, isn't it? Because once you've stepped in there, you want to do it again, don't you?
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, it's strangely addictive, I think.
It is.
Well, I couldn't make it to that show, but you just said about your ring walk and all that, and just the whole experience of going in. It's just, you don't get that adulation.
I don't think there was anyone there. I don't think there was anyone there that was like negatively impacted by waiting around or anything on the day. Everyone was buzzing, and then everyone's had fights, and it's just a brilliant day. Everyone's had a beer at the end of it.
It is.
It's a mad event, isn't it?
You don't get that adulation, do you, in your everyday life of like...
Nah.
But that's why, like, when we spoke to like Frankie and Tommy and that about trying to deal with your mental health issues when you stop boxing.
Yeah, I can understand
that level of like dopamine and endorphins. Yeah. And man, especially if you're doing it in front of hundreds of people for titles or thousands of people.
And then you see people carry on a bit longer, don't you? And maybe that's why. But I think that's probably consistent across most of the professional sport.
Definitely.
How'd you go from being the man?
Yeah.
To just I'm just a regular.
Well, the same, right? No, Ricky Hatton's.
No, he's a prime example.
That came out last week, didn't it?
Yeah.
You know what? That was one of them stories. I kind of feel like, did everyone need to know that?
No.
He was, you know, Ricky Hatton was probably the first. At the age I started boxing, he was just getting into the kind of pinnacle of his career. You know, everyone loved him, and a role model to everyone as a boxer, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, tragic end, and I kind of feel like, maybe that could have just been kept to the landing that news.
Yeah.
But you know, the loose babs are never gonna settle for that.
As ex sportsmen, you're always chasing that buzz, aren't you? 30,000, 50,000 people chanting your name or just being around you, and then to be like, irrelevant. Yeah.
So you got routine, haven't you? Mm. When you don't have to think about it because that's your routine, so you just do that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you've got to think about what your routine is.
Mm. I think particularly with. You're talking about mental health and boxing and the impact it has, because it's the set. I think what you're touching upon there, the kind of sense of achievement you have. You walk into the gym at the start of one of our camps, and I see this. You know, I've seen this for 10 years, and people are nervous because people have got this expectation with boxing that it's going to be a bit moody and that. But you've been in boxing gyms and you know a lot of people in the world. They're not everyone in there sound. Probably because everyone in there is tough enough that no one's going to start being an idiot, are they? So that's a leveler, really. And over the week, you see how much more confident people become. They get fitter. They get in good shape. And then at the end of it, they get to, you know, they're in a ring in front of, you know, how many people are at our shows. It's close to 3,000 we have in Birmingham. That's a massive, massive stage to stand in front of and walk out in front of. You walk out of there, you think you can do anything. You think you can go and, you know, take on the world. And as long as people stick to it, we want to make sure that they then sign up and continue at it. It's going to have a really positive impact on their mental health.
And just going back to when I come and done, when you was doing your kind of face off and stuff, it's a nice atmosphere kind of going, and you met Wes, and Wes knows me. And but it's not necessarily for outgoing people per se. It's for people of all inclinations.
Yeah, even on the show last year, there was some lads that were really quiet, didn't say boo to a goose. There was one lad that didn't say boo to a goose. The lad he was fighting was really confident. He's got a bag at home. And he was really vocal about what he thought he was going to do. And he got absolutely taken apart.
Did he? Yeah.
So, and then...
The quiet ones, isn't
it? The quiet ones always the ones to watch.
The quiet one clearly did a bit away from the gym as well. We trained that 8 weeks and...
Yeah.
But yeah, he's... So, yeah, even that side of it, you've got all kinds there, haven't you? You've literally got every kind of personality there.
Yeah, you do. And I think that's a real benefit of, you know, the fact that you don't have to be... And, you know, some shows, I think there's probably a bit of a barrier to entry on that point. You kind of feel like, well, I have to be an influencer to fight on that. Well, I have to be a certain kind of person. But you are right. We want anyone to come and experience that because we know the benefits it's going to have. And the face-off events are always great because I think the difference in what we do as well is you 95% of the time you're matched against someone in the camp that you've trained with.
Yeah.
So you know them. And we do that to make sure the matchmaking's fair because you've sparred them along the way and the coaches have seen it. We know that's a fair match then.
Yeah.
But it's not red and blue, different gyms versus different gyms. The animosity's not there across it, really. Yeah. Sometimes it can be a bit over-friendly, but...
I was going to say, it must be more difficult then if you've got your mate who you've been sparring with for 6 weeks. You'd prefer to hate someone, wouldn't you, and be like...
Yeah, although you know what? We've had brothers fight each other, cousins fight each other, and then they'll...
I might sign up.
Yeah, I was just about to say, yeah.
You'll start practicing them burpees.
The first week, they'll even come in and they'll say, we're good pals, we're brothers, we're family, don't match us. Or it's the opposite. It's like, we're going to fight each other, make sure you match us together. But obviously, the weights have got to make sense and the abilities have got to be there, but... Yeah, the animosity is not there, but then it's beginners, it's 8 weeks, it's raising money for charity. And as you say, the general feeling of the event is positive, it's happy. We don't have kickoffs in the crowd at our shows. We've got a pretty spotless record of that. So I always touch what we're going to say.
Yeah.
Because you never know, do you, with alcohol and sport. But
yeah.
But yeah, that's the atmosphere we want, really.
I think the charity angle helps that. I think because everyone's there for a common guy and you rise and it's a good cause. I think that kind of feeds into that as well, doesn't it?
And we print your logos on the back of your vests. And it's an obvious part.
It's very family orientated as well. So it's kind of different crowds kind of going and watching Joshua at London kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
I think so, yeah. And when you see massive kick-offs, it is normally in the pro shows. But I imagine just from a, you know, I've never run a stadium show, but if I'm thinking about how to secure... If you did one here with a seat, it's obviously more difficult, isn't it? If something happens in the middle of a row of seats, so it's obviously more difficult to control. But yeah, it's partisan, isn't it? Crowds and it's difficult sometimes to keep a hat on it because you want that atmosphere at a pro show.
Yeah,
you want people going at each other.
Mm. Yeah. So we spoke off camera briefly about it, and we've had this conversation with amateurs, with pros, with bare knuckle. What is your thought process on the unlicensed promotion teams, Ginge with Peaky Promotions? We've had Connor Tierney on. Frankie tried to dip his toe into the bare knuckle fight. What are your thoughts?
To be honest with you, a lot of the names you've just said there, obviously I know who they are and I know what they're doing, but I've never really been to many of their shows. So in terms of how they run their shows, I can't really comment. The difficulty I have with it, and this is not, you know, towards any one person or promoter or anything like that, is you've got fighters that have been in an amateur club since they're 12 or were younger, and they've come through the ranks and they're podium squad and they get picked up by a promotional outfit, and then that everyone knows them then because they are excellent, right? They've mastered their craft and they've done the hard yards and they've earned that. And I think I've got to say, we're guilty of this to a certain extent because we're giving novices the platform to make themselves feel like they are like that. What you find is sometimes is that people then start to believe that. And if, you know, we were talking about misfits earlier and, you know, you look at some of the people that are on it and the quality of the fights on it, and it doesn't really marry up with the level of interest and the fact that this is on the zone and that kind of stuff. And does that dilute the kind of the people that have done the 15 years in the sport and really earned the position and earned the right really to be there? Whereas you've got someone that's got a load of followers and you know, they're on a par in terms of how much they might be getting paid. And I think that's difficult to kind of to understand exactly how that has happened. But I guess it sells, doesn't it?
Well, we've had that quandary with different people that we've spoke to, is that On one side, you've got this diluted circus type of stuff. On the other side, is it building the brand for everyone? So it's making it global. It's getting a lot of interest in boxing. I know boxing has been popular over the past, whatever.
Yeah.
God knows how many years, but it seems to be peaking now for the younger generation. So there's kind of a juxtaposition where you're like, all right, Jake Paul and Anthony Joshua and all that kind of stuff. But they're making millions and millions of pounds. So why would Joshua go and fight someone for a bout when he can go and chin an influencer?
Chin Jake Paul, It's a really interesting conversation because I am certainly not one of these people that will say it's bad for the sport. Definitely not, you know, because some people would say what we've done, white collar's not good for the sport and that kind of stuff. And, bringing Jake Paul up, if you go back, was it 6 years when he started, when he entered the set? I don't know how long ago it was. But, yeah, he probably didn't deserve to have the platform he had from a boxing point of view then. To be fair to Jake Paul, since then, it looks like he's lived and trained as a pro since then. And he's got infinitely better, hasn't it? Yeah. So he's probably earned the right to be in the ring, not with Anthony Joshua, obviously, but we've as a pro fighter, I think.
Well, you're watching that, though, just waiting for the moment when, obviously, he knocked him out and broke his jaw at the end, didn't he? But you're watching that, just waiting for him to kind of kick up again.
Yeah, and you kind of think, is it going to happen? Up until 5 hours before the fight, is this actually going to happen? Is he going to get in there? Fair play, Jake Paul for getting in there. But to answer your question, is it beneficial to the sport? Probably. I think it's probably getting boxing in front of a crowd that... a crowd that probably didn't want to be involved in it. So the influencer circle has brought these new people into the sport. And as long as it's done properly, the same benefits that we're talking about, what we offer to people, they're going to see that anyway. So yeah, it's all just different, it's different ways of marketing. And the people that you talked about in terms of Bare Knuckle and more people locally that promote shows and the way they're doing it, it's not the way I would do it. That's not the way we've ever had to do it. Our products are completely different, but they promote the show the way they are doing it. And you might, you might look at that and think, oh no, I'm not sure about that. But it is getting more eyes on the sport. And as long as they run it safely and properly, it is probably beneficial to younger people coming through and thinking, I'm going to have a go at that.
And you touched upon it, just that if they're not for you, they might be for these. If they're not for these, but you're keeping them in the... You're keeping him in the
ecosystem.
Like the
Chase DeMore and Tate fight. Did you watch that? You must be watching it. I could make this an early night.
I think so, because I was never a world beater of boxing. I probably had just over 30 bouts all in all, if you talk about amateur and a license and that kind of stuff. But then I've looked at some of these people fighting on Misfits and I think, how much are they getting paid? Because if I squeeze an 8 week camp in here, I reckon I could do all right against these people. And there's going to be hundreds of people in my position sitting there looking at that. But it's a different model, isn't it? They're not there because they can fight. They're there because they've got 2 million followers on TikTok. But that Chase DeMore fight, that first one, that was, didn't make for good viewing.
Bonkers. Bonkers. But Tommy mentioned it the other week, that now it's just pick up your phone, call someone out you think is that he said, I think his view on it was, they're not looking for competitive fights, they're looking for named fights. It doesn't matter who beats someone else up, but if they're sharing and collabing, and the way social media is these days, you can self-promote, and the promoters are getting their work done
I think that's probably a difficult position to sit then, isn't it? Because everything we've spoke about now is, as long as it's done properly and safely, promote the show the way you want to promote the show, that's fine. But there's got to be that compliance, that level of risk mitigation to make sure that actually what you're putting on is proper and
safe.
If something goes wrong, and this is the way you have to look at events and in business in general, is you've got to think about risk. And if something goes wrong and I get pulled in front of a few people and I've got to answer questions, am I confident that I've done everything right up to that
position? That you are putting your name to that.
Well, it was the last Misfits card, was that Jared Jones, wasn't it? The British gold medal taekwondo champion.
This was mad.
Against the singer.
And I remember Jade Jones. The first time I heard her name is we use Simac in Solihull, which is the manufacturer. We used to get our gloves from there and all that kind of stuff. She was one of the, I'm pretty sure Jade Jones was an Adidas sponsored athlete. And Simac had I think they got the UK distribution rights to Adidas. It's taekwondo, wasn't it? I think she did. So she's been an Olympian and an athlete all that time. And then people say, oh, she's never boxed before. You are mad if you're saying there's no crossover from the level of even the mindset, the training, the fitness, the strength, the timing, her footwork. I used to box with a lady who came from a taekwondo background. I couldn't lay a glove on him. The way he judged distance was incredible. So to stick her in a ring with that, and she absolutely flattened it, didn't she?
Well, you talk about like don't let them see your shots coming. She didn't have to worry about that, did she? She was just loading up. One, yeah, bang, two, bang. But yeah, if that woman ended up with a,
So I don't know how you. Yeah, look, the people that run Misfits are serious operators, aren't they? You know, they know what they obviously know what they're doing, and they do it to a really good standard. But if that was me, if I'm looking and I'm sitting watching that match, I'm thinking, I hope she doesn't knock her out, because I don't know how I would answer the question, how that's a fair match. I don't know if you can. Or other than,
they must get them to sign their life away, though, mustn't they? Yeah. To say, this, I know what it is.
I guess.
Put the onus back on them.
Yeah. But then, yeah, I think you're probably right, and everyone does sign that. But then,
and for the insurers then, though. Like,
this is probably the part that a lot of people that run shows don't think about. But there's an obvious, I think you're right in the sense that they'll have signed something, but then still you've facilitated that. You the onus is on you to make sure that you've done your checks and balances to say that what you are providing is fair. And maybe the fact that they've both never had a boxing fight,
that's maybe how they've
it's loose, isn't it?
yeah
it ain't gonna hold water, that is it?
Yeah, I don't think so, but I saw that and I thought that was mad. I mean, I wasn't following it up. I think I saw it a few days before the weigh-in. I thought, no way, who's she fighting? I bet they must have stuck her with someone who's half good. No.
Singer. Just talking about marketing. Was it 13 years ago? So Riggs Fitness, you've opened the gym. How long after the gym did you do the video? So only because, everything we do is to try and garner viral engagement, which we're doing okay. 13 years ago, you got 6.8 million views on a video.
Yeah.
An instructional video, you skipping, showing what you do in the gym, showing how to lose weight with
good video,
a training program.
Yeah.
So just talk us through that video.
I'm glad I can speak about it now, because I've had enough therapy over the years to make me deal with the comments that I got. But yeah, so, you know, that video was, the reason we did that was I used to skip, not run. I've always hated, I'm not a very good runner. I didn't like running. So I boxed at 75 kilos. I'm just about 6'1", and I walk around at 88 now. So it was a lot of weight for me to kind of keep under. And I used to skip for it. So then when we opened the gym, we did a skip fit class a couple of times a week. And that's like a 45 minute high intensity skipping class with bodyweight fitness and that kind of stuff. I thought, well, let's do a video to kind of show the benefits of skipping. And my older brother, who is my business partner, who certainly got the majority of the brains in our family, he set this up and he filmed it, and we had a camera in place in the same spot for 10 weeks. And then three times a week, I'd have to stand on the X marks the spot, skip, and we started off slowly, and then it got faster and faster, and I finished doing double unders. And then he edited it to make it look like it was just amalgamated into 1 2-minute, and slowly my abs were coming through. And I think, you know what, it was, look back at it sometimes, I think that actually was a wicked video. And we got, probably it was closer to about 8 million because we got 6.5, but somebody downloaded it, uploaded it as theirs, and they got about 2 or 1.5 as well. So loads of views, and there were people coming in saying, I've seen the Skippy video, we'd like to come and have a go. So it really worked. But the reason it probably went viral is because people just wanted to take the piss out of what I was wearing on my feet, basically. So this is...
And what was it? What were you wearing?
Do you remember the Vibram 5-finger shoes, where you have an individual kind of like pocket for each shoe? So I was wearing them, and I was just wearing my shorts in it. And when we got all these millions of views, I thought, me and my brother looked at it and we thought, you know what, we've done something really good here. Like, we're teaching people how to lose weight and get fit and healthy. So we look at the comments and we're hoping people are going, hey, that's wicked, I'm going to try this myself. The first comment I saw at the top was someone saying, congratulations, you can squeeze into that dress you've always wanted to wear now. I thought, you fuck. And then you go down the comments and the shoes just got absolutely hammered. Hurl them in the sea, burn them, bury them. What are those? About 40 times. Luckily, I don't take myself so seriously, but the...
You're just looking at the views and you're thinking, all right, have a look at that.
This is before views and engagement. This is before it was
before Instagram with bananas
before
or TikTok.
To go viral.
So what happens then? Did you Do you get any kind of revenues from YouTube for the numbers?
Yeah, yeah. So we set it up properly as a, like a merchant account. Like you get, I think you get a grand for every million views, don't you?
Mm,
so we earned a few quid. It certainly paid for the shoes. But the
paid for the shoes.
Yeah. And what we did off the back of it, because it was genuinely a good bit of brand exposure,
aged really well as well.
I think
it's aged right. Yeah.
We made another video of me reading out the comments, basically, you know, taking the piss out of myself and that got another 100,000 of that kind of stuff. You know, it's just outside the box and trying to market it. We, you know, that's what you kind of think, well, what are people not doing? Let's have a go at it. And that one really hit. But yeah, it was fun. And my pal still don't let me hear the end of it. Everyone will bring it up.
Have you still got the shoes?
No. I hold them in the sea like someone suggested, I think.
So what's the future hold for you and your business and the businesses that you're involved with? What's on the horizon?
So we've got loads going on. I think we had a conversation before. Obviously the gym, I've got two people running the gym for me now. So Rob and Lou run it. It's a slightly different product that they offer, but the gym's still really successful. 14 years we've had that now, which is great. So I'm still
especially in the current climate, mate. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a big success story, you know, to be honest, the gym has, and then everything's grown off it anyway. The event side of stuff, we like I said, we were doing 40 or 50 a year. We've pulled that back a lot. We do about 10 shows a year now. And we've got various other bits going on. Me and my brother, we've got a property business local in Birmingham and we've got a couple of bits up in the Northwest as well. But a lot of the work I do is working with founders in the same industry. So kind of health and fitness based businesses, people that are opening gyms that have got different ideas about classes, one retreat festival, which we spoke about, which I'm involved in as well. So almost like the experience I've had over the last 14 years, I sit down and tell everyone what not to do, all the mistakes you made, really. So I do really enjoy working with founders, whether you'd call it like mentorship or consultancy, that kind of stuff. We're really excited about One Retreat, which is a wellness festival. So it's along the events line of stuff we do again, but something completely different. It's Alex Hyde, who worked for me back at the gym years ago. It's her kind of idea. It's her passion project. It's the name came from Alex as well. But she asked me to come and help her on the commercial side and the event setup side. And that's going to be the first one we're doing, 6th of June, Highbury Hall. And it's just kind of gone way bigger than we first imagined. We've got, I think, 65 local practitioners in the wellness industry that are going to come give sessions on the day. Festival vibe, so we've got music going on. We've got your kind of hot and cold therapy, contrast therapy, so saunas, ice bath, talk tents with people coming and chatting about health and fitness. So we're excited about that. We're planning to do 3 or 4 a year of those as well.
Oh, that's good. I've been best of all the last couple of years, and I've got... I make an absolute fortune. I'd rob the banks and his missus running.
Yeah.
And they've got like an area for a similar thing. But yeah, they are the same thing, sold out every year. I think there's a real movement towards wellness.
I think the same, yeah, exactly that. So my partner's into wellness and Reiki and stuff like that.
And
companies now are actively pushing people for money to the side to spend on wellness. So massages, mind, body, soul, and all that kind of stuff. So I think companies now are buying into the fact that for a good
member, look after the
for a good employee, you need to be fully fit, body, mind, and soul. Yeah,
and it makes sense, and it signals a, in my opinion, a really positive change. What you're talking about, because you know, wellness industry, whatever you want to call it, it's just looking after your health, right? It's a more holistic look at it. And you're talking about Reiki, and that's at one end of the scale. But then you've got yoga, Pilates, mindfulness. But we've got people coming and talking. We've got someone that does financial advice specifically for female entrepreneurs and stuff. So you can class all of that within wellness and looking after yourself. And there is a big shift towards it. Birmingham is behind the curve, as always. London's got loads of little mini festivals of wellness. Manchester's got them, but we're the first to kind of launch one in Birmingham. And I think the need is there because of how well it's been received. And there's just a real kind of swell around people that understand exactly what you've said, that actually people aren't going out boozing as much anymore.
I was going to say, the thing previously, you work at, like the pictures on LinkedIn, isn't it? Oh, I work at looking after, and there's a pizza and a load of cans of pop.
Yeah.
Like, maybe not everyone wants a pizza, like
No, and look, there's still a place for that, isn't there? Yeah. To go out and have a beer on a Saturday night, but just you know, a shift in the way people are thinking, I think, towards the fact that, yeah, actually, I do need to think a little bit about, in 20 years' time, I'm going to be able to look after my kids and grandkids, and there's a view to the future, and that's what wellness, in my opinion, is. It's making sure that you've got one eye on the future and thinking about how healthy you are, whether that's in your mind, whether it's in your body. It's not saying no one all got to have six packs and you know, look like you can go do a bodybuilding show, but it's more of a shift towards making sure we're thinking about being healthier, and that industry can only be positive, in my opinion.
Big fan of it.
Yeah. Why the world as well at the minute? It's like a bleeding loony bin, isn't it? So
yeah, we all need a release somewhere, because turn the news on for a little bit, and yeah, it's stressful. And I don't, you know, if you've got kids as well, if you've got young kids,
it's managing the stress, isn't it? Helps you manage the stress to go to your happy place. Do you know what I mean? And and just know that you've got a place that you can kind of switch off, yoga, and because like even blokes our age, kind of, we would poo poo this. Well, we would poo. You'd put you. 20 years ago, you'd poo-poo, wouldn't you? Do you know what I mean? And be like, it's a bit... But now it's widely accepted that, okay, let's...
Well, I've got the bowel for yoga classes booked out every week. You can't can't go on it. You do circuits and stuff, but you can't go on the yoga.
And it is, you're right, it's a group of people. You know, the amount of my pals and it's 20 years ago, they'd have been out until 4 o'clock in the morning doing all sorts. And all you see now is they're climbing Machu Picchu somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Be really zen at the top of a mountain somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it's different for everyone, like you just said. And what we're trying to do with the festival is just kind of celebrate the industry in Birmingham, the wellness industry. And it's, some people might just come and want to chill out, listen to some music and eat some of the healthier food options we've got there. And there's loads of like zero alcohol providers who are going to be there and that kind of stuff, or someone might want to come and do a Reiki massage, and it's everything in between. But I'm hoping that kind of galvanizes a little bit of support, and we can actually put those on a few days a year, because it is what people need at the moment.
Yeah,
they need that release from stress.
Class.
Definitely.
So with your experience then, so what advice would you have for any budding entrepreneurs, particularly Brummies? Give you the ideas.
Yeah,
amazing. But my people who want to emulate the success within fitness, within marketing, within promotion, what are your go-to words of advice?
Yeah, so for me, and I can only gauge on exactly the kind of journey I've been on as a founder and learning along the way. There's two things I always say to people. The first one is if you're a founder and you've got an idea for a business and a brand, you usually know what your skill set is, and that means you know what your skill set isn't. And I think the sooner you can surround yourself with people that fill the gaps in your skill set, the better. Because what you find a lot of the time is people think they'll just try and do it all themselves, and that might get them to a certain level.
Yep.
But as soon as you try and scale a business, and you might be looking for investment or that kind of stuff, they're going to be looking, if you've got VC backed investment coming in, looking at what you've got, they want to know that business can succeed without the founder in it. That's what they're going to look at. So my view would be the sooner you realise I'm not very good at that bit or that bit, get someone in who can do that for you. And I had that the whole way. I'm a kind of big picture strategy guy in business. I can look at where we are and where we've got to get to, understand why we're going to be there and what we're going to do when we're there. But the detail in between, that's not my forte. So I've always had partners and business partners that are detail oriented, you know, the real operations managers or the change managers and the project managers, and they'll be in the detail and I do what I'm good at. And I think that would be my first advice is identify you can't do it all yourself. The other bit of advice I think is you've got to really believe in your products, even when everyone tells you it ain't going to work, because they are going to say that at some point. And I had that all the, you know, people saying,
it's a mad thing, that is, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's a mad thing that people will shout for the rooftops about celebrities doing things. Oh, look, they've brought out a clothing line.
Yeah.
But you do it, or you do something, or you know something, and it's all put down. Oh, no, that won't work. Oh, you don't want to do that. Oh.
Yeah, it's funny, that, isn't it? Because people say, what was the one in the press recently? Was it David Beckham's daughter's launching a clothing line or something like that? Look, nothing against David Beckham's daughter.
Of course, yeah.
I hope she does really well with it, yeah. But she's not really founding it, is she? Because she's already got millions and millions and millions.
I don't know if you've seen a documentary, it was to do with Victoria as well, with the whole clothing line and stuff, isn't it?
And they'll have access to a world of fame that means they're never going to have an issue. So it is interesting that people, maybe it's a little bit of you've got someone that works a 9-to-5 and they're a bit jealous. I wish I could do that. And there's a bit of, are you sure you want to do that? But you've got to be a bit pig-headed, in my opinion, as a fan.
Yeah, definitely.
You got to know that it's going to work, and you all you can think about is how that's going to be successful. Surround yourself with experienced people. When you get to the stage that you might need a board or that kind of stuff, have a director on the board that's been there, done that, that can maybe just pull you back a little bit and ask the questions, what if this happens? But as a founder, you've got to be belligerent in the way that you are going to achieve your goal.
Well, we're discussing it on the way up as well, that we had Steve Bull on the other week, and his driving kind of ambition was because his manager at West Brom said he hasn't got a first touch and he's got no left foot.
Yeah.
And then he's scoring for England in World Cup. And he's going, well, up yours. You know what I mean? And you've got to have that certain...
Yeah. Did you have a teacher or something? Was like, no, you can't do that. Normally people have got a teacher.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or an arsey uncle or something. Oh, you'll never do that.
There's not one person I can pin it to, but...
Well, they all give it you.
Yeah. But there's not like one individual person, but it's little comments all the time from people like, are you sure you want to do that? And I think it's just because it's not the norm, is it? People stepping away from the standard 9-to-5 and doing something completely different isn't the norm. It's interesting you mentioned Steve, but it's funny, isn't it, that you can have two people and they'll take that. One will take it the way he took it, is, no, I'm going to show you I am good enough, and the other will listen to it and start
get beaten to the ground.
And it's an interesting mentality. Mm-hmm. What makes up the person that is going to go, yeah, I've listened to what you said, but I'm going to go and do it anyway.
It's probably the same. Yeah, I'd imagine it's similar to you when you're training, and if you're hands on with people, that some people need a bit of banter, and other people need an arm around the shoulder. It sounds football managers and football and stuff like that. It's gauging what their motivations are, I suppose, isn't it, as a person? Because if you're battering someone who's not used to that, they're just going to go, oh, sorry, I'll just give it up.
They'll go within themselves and start one.
Yeah, whereas someone else would be like, well, oh, come on then, let's have it. Yeah.
But John Peggs as well, weren't it? Sorry. Obviously, he's a world-renowned boxing trainer, but then he wrote a film and he ended up winning awards at an international film festival. He's like, I just wanted to do it.
Don't
worry about what anyone thinks.
There's a lot to be said about that. And I think... It's cliche, isn't it? You know, you can do whatever you want to do if you just put your mind to it. It is cliche, but within reason, I think if you really do put all of your energy into a goal, then you're going to find a way to get there.
And you've got the internet now, haven't you? So you've got endless possibilities for reach.
Yeah.
I think that's a boxer's resilience as well, what it's taught with John and stuff like that. And there's a certain, like you touched upon earlier, there's a certain thing that boxers have where they've got certain things that they're taught, and that resilience is one of them, that you're just like, well, I'm going to do it. And he was saying in his that people are like, you're mental, aren't you?
Yeah.
And he's going, well, I'm just going to do it. And then he's done it.
The UK as well is particularly, you know, this is a wider topic, isn't it? But I think the UK is particularly, if you're particularly bad at not letting people experience losses early. I think the way the school system's developed and the way people are brought up, it's kind of shuns away from it. And you know, we go further away from competition in schools and everyone just taking part in that kind of stuff. But the younger and the earlier in life you can understand what it feels like to lose or something, the more resilient you're going to be. And there's definitely a link between sport and you know, how that crosses over into business, which is why you see, you know, all of the England Rugby World Cup winning squad. They're all working in mega banks and businesses now, aren't they? And they're all getting bought in to talk to people about how mindset and how what they did on the pitch can be emulated in business, because there's definitely crossover in mindset. And but you know, back to the original question about founders, you've got to have that in you. I think if you don't have it in you, if you're not sure and you just think, oh, you know, I just want to earn a load of money, but you're not sure about your product and you don't mind people saying that it ain't going to work, then it's going to be a tough time, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Thanks for your time, mate. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much. Yeah. Thanks for the burpees. Really appreciate then.
Still 4 weeks more to come.
If you like this video, please do click to subscribe to the channel. We currently have 5,500 members, over 500,000 views. So let's convert some views into memberships, and that'll continue to enable us to bring great guests on and continue making great podcasts. Thanks.